We still do 7 NUFC Matters show a week for free. But if you want to help support NUFC Matters, then there are a few ways of doing it. Hit the like button on each live broadcast and video. This helps the channel grow. Hit the subscribe button and select the all notifications bell so you don't miss a single show. If you want to help us financially, then you can join the channel using this button with the membership starting at $1.99 a month. Or you can drop us a donation in the chat using a super sticker. We're also looking for sponsors. If you'd like your brand advertised on the flyers for the show and featured during the ad break, then email John at nufcmatters.com to arrange today. Good afternoon. Welcome to NUFC Matters Talk of the Town with me and Sid. Rob will be joining us halfway through the programme. Good afternoon, Sid.
Hello, Steve. How are you doing?
Good, mate. Good to see you. International weekend, of course, so no game to talk about today to start with. But England, played Brazil. Of course, they play Belgium tonight. Rather a damp squib that game of the weekend, Sid.
Yeah, it was. Wasn't exciting, was it? I like most Newcastle fans, I think we just tend to focus on Gordon and Bruno and see how they were getting on, because I follow England and all the rest of it, but sometimes it's been so dull that you tend not to watch some of the internationals, certainly the friendlies. But I watched it because Gordon was playing and obviously Bruno was playing, and it's normally great games, England and Brazil in the past, but it was just boring. Two similar sort of teams, actually, where the attackers were able to get the better of the defences on most occasions. So that's interesting to see. I thought Gordon played really well. I mean, I thought Bellingham is different class. There's a real shout that he'll win Best Player of the Year and Best World Player of the Year this year. He's absolutely sensational. He's just a proper, genuinely world-class footballer. You know, he's got everything about him. Whereas in the past, I think with England, have seen midfielders who've looked world-class for their teams, for their own teams, and not really ripped it up at international level. I'm thinking of Steven Gerrard in particular, who I don't think anybody could say wasn't one of the best midfielders that the Premier League's ever had. And he's done it on European football stage as well. I mean, he almost single-handedly won the European Cup or Champions League. But never really did it for England. Didn't make you think, oh, he's sensational, you know. Bellingham looks like that. He looks like he's got everything. He genuinely looks, wow, what a player he is. So that he's exciting to watch. But Gordon, after that, was the next best player, I thought, in terms of England. I thought he was very, very good. Didn't give the ball away. I noticed he chased back and harried, left the players with no time whatsoever on the ball. Really harangued the opposition. Passed, did some decent passes, little push forwards. As I see, his pressing was great. I thought his interchange with Bellingham was actually very good. So I was very impressed with him. He had a shot, which was just pretty tame, really. The keeper would have had to save that, really. But, you know, take my hat off to him. He's done himself no harm whatsoever. I believe there's a real chance he's going to start tonight or at least get a game tonight. So does well to that, then I think he'll be in the Euros. I'd be surprised if he's not. There are others. I think Bruno was excellent. Actually, I have to say, by the way, for Brazil, I thought he was terrific. He just got the ball and dictated the middle of the park for Brazil and whipped a couple of balls through with Paqueta, which was just superb. Mind you, Paqueta should have been off on about four occasions. I mean, what was the referee doing? I appreciate it's friendly. You don't really want to give anybody a red card. My God, Bellingham was brought down about 7 or 8 times with tackles from behind.
Mm.
Yeah, 30 years ago, they'd have just been like, pack it in, lads. But now it's a straight yellow. And, you know, they should have been off, really.
They linked up quite well, him and Paqueta. I mean, obviously, it was Paqueta who Newcastle were originally interested in signing. I've seen a few Newcastle fans saying, you know, it's a pity we couldn't persuade him to come and sign for Newcastle, you know, still, because he would, you know, he would team up well with Bruno in the middle.
I agree, because when he first went to West Ham, I think a lot of fans probably think the same. I'm not speaking for everybody, obviously. But he looked rubbish, you know. He didn't look very good at all. And I was thinking, whoa, we've avoided that. He doesn't look that much, one little bit. And then all of a sudden, like it takes a lot of players, it took him about 5 months to bed himself in. And we could say the same about Anthony Gordon, of course. Mm. It took him about 5 months to bed himself in, and he looks a really good player. You can see why he's probably going to go to Manchester City in the summer, judging by the fact that they gave the centre midfield, the holding lad, to West Ham over any other club. It looks like, 85 release clause. It looks like he's going to go to Man City, I think, you know.
I think that deal's already done, more or less. It was almost done.
I think it's absolutely done. Absolutely done. He's a good player, and he'll fit in perfectly with Man City with his little one-touch interplayer. And he's almost the nearest player England have got to him's Madison.
Mm-hmm.
He just unlocks defences, and he can float, and he can do all those little things. I actually think Madison's a better player. I have to say, I think Madison's actually a better player. But Madison's never fit, you know. People, if you look, Madison's fitness record's terrible. Terrific player. The type of player Newcastle desperately need to go and buy in the summer. And as we're led to believe, of course, Eddie Howe wanted to get the Madison deal over the line and thought he'd had it, didn't he?
Yeah.
Only for Ashford not to really do his job.
Mm-hmm.
And we were going to change the formation, allegedly. Again, it's only what you hear, isn't it?
Yeah.
So...
Yep.
It's hard to have a go at Eddie Howe over that when you have all your plans and your pre-season plans have been scuppered, really. And yes, we may have players who can play in that position. I mean, the one that jumps out to me is Elliot Anderson. But you've got to give, you know, you'd rather have somebody who's already proven and then let Anderson develop, which he looks like he's already doing when he's been coming on over a bit of time.
What's your thoughts on the striker situation for England as well? I mean, you know, Harry Kane injured, not available. England struggling for goals, losing against Brazil 1-0. And it's not the Brazil in 1970. You know, they're not a great Brazil team.
Or 82 is the best Brazil team I've ever seen, of course. That was unbelievable.
Disappointing result for England and Southgate in particular. But Watkins, you know, Ivan Toney, is, you know, are either of them the answer if Harry Kane's unavailable?
Yes, Toney. I think Toney is. I think he holds the ball up. I think he... his interplay is really, really good. His all-round ability is top draw. I think he's absolutely great. I would take Toney all day long at Newcastle. I think he's better than, totally agree with Darren. I think he's definitely better than Watkins. Watkins is a super player, don't get me wrong. He would do a really good job at Newcastle as well with getting behind the back lines. He's that sort of striker. Toney's a more complete player.
Yeah.
Not an all-round player. If we're talking in past type styles, you'd probably talk about Watkins almost being like an Andy Cole, get behind the mark, the front man, and sort of whip in and score in the box. Where, as I say, Watkins is your more all-rounded sort of centre forward. I think he's got a little bit more about him. Not that either of them are bad, may I add. I do like Watkins, but he's not quite at the top level. And I think Toney has the potential to be there, actually. I know he's getting on a bit. He's 27, crying out loud. You know, I'd love to be getting on at 27. But Kane's just magnificent. And I think Kane with Foden and Bellingham up front is a frightening three. It's the best front three in the world. They can interchange. Kane drops off. Yeah, if Wilson was fit, you know, he's a perfect answer. Anybody ain't, and he never is, unfortunately. I totally agree with Julie. But I think, as a front three, amazing. I think the middle three could be great. I think I agreed with Alan Shearer recently when he says England have got the best front six in the world, and I totally concur with that. I just think defensively, I'm sorry, but Harry Maguire, how is he still getting a game? I mean, yeah, there were two situations where he fluffed up, is the polite way of saying it. Fluffed was the word. And somebody just came in and should have scored, really. Should have scored certainly on one of them. I think they've got England have got an average goalkeeper, but he'll probably be good enough to get by. But I don't see anybody else replacing him at the minute because I think the English goalkeeping situation is not very good. I think the left back was terrible. What's his name again? The Chelsea kid?
Chilwell.
Chilwell. What happened to him? He was a really, really good player, but he's injured so often. He just doesn't look the same player. It's a real shame England don't have a left back. I think Braithwaite could force his way into the starting 11 for the Europeans. He looks a top player, and I wish we could get him, but we won't. I know we've been linked with him, but he'll go to a Champions League team. You know,
is that the Everton kid, Brantwaite? Yeah. Is it? Yeah. He's an interesting. It's an interesting, you know, show.
Isn't that a Newcastle fan as well?
I don't know.
I read he was a Newcastle fan. Mm. He's from Carlisle.
Right. Okay.
Somebody can correct me on that. I might be wrong, but I'm sure I read that.
Quite a few questions coming in. Ivan Tony's certainly got people talking. Tom Dixon says, would you take Tony in the summer window? I think you've already said you would. Yep. 75. I think Stephen's put a typo in here. It's 75 million, I think, that Ivan Tony, not 375 million. He is Premier League ready and he is proven. I think the elephant in the room with that one, though, is the fact that he was already at Newcastle. You know, and does he really want to come up this way? I can imagine that he's quite settled down south with Brentford. And I think he probably fancies Spurs or Arsenal if they wanted him.
He might do, but he was tracked poorly. You know, Rafa never played him. It was the other one. We had two strikers, didn't we? And both of them left and did all right. Tony's obviously done really, really well. Just not given a chance. Not given a chance. And he's got everything. He's quite quick. He's not lightning, but he's strong. He's good in the air. He's got a good first touch. He's got a bit of arrogance about him, which you have to have as a centre forward as well. All good players have got a bit of arrogance about them, you know.
Mm.
Yeah. Every good player. And he's got a bit of that. He's got a bit of a swagger, if you like. So I really, really like him. And he doesn't doubt his ability. He doesn't doubt it one iota. Look at his penalties. They're ridiculous. He moves 1 yard. You know, and he psychs out the keeper.
Yeah.
Just watches him psych him, bang. And I think he's missed one, and it was against us. You know, it was against Nick Pope. I think he's a really, really good player. Who's Kelly? What about Kelly? Oh, yeah, the left back. Definitely, I would, because he can play centre half as well from Bournemouth. He's the only Bournemouth player, may I add, that I would take. I don't want to see any more, but I would definitely take Kelly.
Blue Rhythm Boy says Tony's been very clear. He wants to go to an Arsenal or a Liverpool. He's named those clubs numerous times in interviews, which is interesting. Roger says Kelly's another sick note. Free or not, best avoid, in my opinion. Smith Rowe the same. There's a few
Smith
players.
Smith Rowe's another one, isn't he? He's been linked massively, and I know all the papers and all the online sites are mentioning Smith Rowe. He's not getting a game for Arsenal. I mean, I read his stats recently. He's played 20 games, no goals. Really? I mean, he's another Conor Gallagher to me. I could be wrong, and I might be eating a massive slice of humble pie. But Conor Gallagher the other day, again, going back to England in some respects, been massively linked to Newcastle for a while and turned us down allegedly on a couple of occasions. And he looked bang average for England. Every time he got the ball, he kept giving it away.
I'm glad you said that, because other people seem to think he had a great game. I thought he was terrible.
It was terrible. The whole thing of international football is to hold on the ball and advance with it and try and do something. And he did nothing. He did absolutely nothing. His stats aren't great either. Let him go to Spurs for 40 million. Good luck. Not for me. The same with Smith Rowe. Going back to Smith Rowe, same with him. I mean, I've got a horrible feeling we'll get him. I do.
Is Southgate's time up, do you think, after the Euros? Do you think it's time to bring in a new manager?
It should have been up after the World Cup. It should have been up after the World Cup. I mean, for me, the Euros, the last time round, we should have won it. And his poor management, when we went 1-0 up, instead of going on to try and pound Italy into the ground, really, because they were infinitely a better team on paper, and he bottled it. He just sort of stepped back and let them Dick Tipping, and they scored. He was trying to hold on to a 1-0 after about, it wasn't, we scored very early that game, if I recall rightly. And he's trying to hold on to a 1-0 win. England should have just went on and won 2 or 3-0. They had the players to do so. And he's a negative manager. I think he's going to take a few more chances, but even then, I still think he's always defensively minded and will always pick his favourite players. I mean, going back to Maguire, I mean, for God's sake, you know, and the left back.
Yeah.
You know, change it. Just change it. And it'd be interesting to see who they get. It's going to depend on what happens with Newcastle in the summer. Because it could be Eddie Howe. Could be Eddie Howe.
Yeah, it could be.
Could be. I mean, he would be, as an Englishman, he's the obvious number one shout, if you like, if you're looking for an English manager. Or they might go down the Jose Mourinho route. Or, I mean, the other one who would be ideal at international football, but I don't think he'd have it, would be Rafa Benitez. You know, he would be perfect at international football. And he could still live in this country and, you know, do his thing and be superb at it because he's tactically spot on. It'll be interesting. It'll be interesting to see which way they go. I don't think they'll go down the route of Potter, who I like, actually. I think I quite like him.
I always felt that Potter was made for England. Darren Lee's just in the chat there as well. He says exactly the same. He says Potter will end up as England manager. I did think that. He seems to have knocked back a load of jobs to almost waiting. You know what I mean?
I think it'd be excellent.
to keep Eddie Howe away from us. Taylor, good afternoon. He says, afternoon, lads. The boy, Roe Smith's a class act, but he's made of glass. What about Benjamin Sesko, he says?
Yeah, top player, isn't he? Looks really, really good, but he's not even getting the game, is he, for Leverkusen? I think he's 20-21, looks excellent. He's got everything. He's fast, he's strong, he's good in the air, good on the ground, and he's not getting the game. Tells you how good the other lad must be. And they're walking the league.
Yeah.
Definitely. Definitely take Sesko.
Sid says, trademark of a Southgate England team is to try and hold a lead and sit back instead of going for the jugular. I just think they've gone stale. And I've said this on the North East Footy Brekkie show in the last couple of weeks as well. I just think we missed the boat with the semi-final and the final that Southgate got us to. And I think now we're in a transitional period again. I think he's finding it difficult to play Foden and Bellingham in the same team. And I think that's almost like his Gerard Lampard moment. And I just think that's where we're struggling a little bit. And when Kane's out of the team, because the whole England team is set up for Kane to score goals, it's difficult for somebody like Tony or Watkins to come in and adapt to the similar kind of style because they're not Harry Kane. So it's a combination of things which are making things awkward for England. And again, in a lot of ways, you've got an aging back four. Your best players are Kyle Walker, Kieran Trippier, and, you know, Harry Maguire is always going to be an ever-present under Southgate. And those players are all knocking on a bit, you know. So, with the exception of your goalkeeper, which seems to be your strongest position, because you've got Pickford, much to the malign of Newcastle fans. You've got Aaron Ramsdale, who's, done okay. And you've got Nick Pope when he's not injured. You know, you've got probably three or four decent keepers who could all step in between the sticks.
None of them world-class.
No, they're not.
Even Pickford. They're all good keepers, but none of them of the City, for example, the standard of the Brazil keepers. I mean, Brazil have got the two best goalkeepers in the world, in my opinion. You know, one and two, which is crazy when you look at was it Taffarel had in the 80s? They had the best attacking team I've ever seen in my life and a terrible goalkeeper. Whereas now it's the other way around.
Yeah. Blue Rhythm Boy says, I find it mad all the talk of Southgate leaving just before a tournament. Get behind the guy in the team for the tournament, then reflect afterwards. It happened with Sir Bobby Robson, Blue Rhythm Boy, just before 1990, though, if you remember. I mean, there was hell on. I remember Sir Bobby sitting at the press conference. The papers were going hammering tongs at him, wanting him out. And we got to the semi-finals. And had it not been for, you know, misfortune against the Germans, England would have gone through. And the rest, you know, the rest could have been history. Could have been dancing dancing in Italy as Alf Ramsey was at Wembley in 1966. But,
That's the best England team I've ever seen, the 1990 team. It's the best team I've seen.
1990 and 1996. 1990 because it was the rebirth of football after hooliganism, after European bans for England teams. And for me, yeah, you know, Gazza in his infancy and all of that. Beardsley, Waddle, Gazza, you know, Newcastle's Magic Three that got sold to fund new, you know, new parts of the ground and stuff like that. But it made you proud to be a Geordie to see all of that. And it was...
Well, the score of them have included Brian Robson. It was a Newcastle fan.
It was just a reboot of football, though, wasn't it?
And
it was
including Stevens,
Trevor Stephen. Yeah, of course he was a Berwick lad, wasn't he? And you had the rebirth of football. It was as simple as that. That's why 1990 holds a close place in our heart. And then 1996 was almost. I look back now and think 1996 was the end of it, because you know 1996 by that time the Premier League had started, and that was the rebirth of something. You know, it was like the birth of new age football came after 1996. I mean, Gazza really didn't see any glory days again. Shearer came to the end of his football, you know, his international football career. And we lost something then. And then football evolved into this kind of Lampard Gerrard era and Spice Boys and all of that kind of situation. And it's never really recovered. And with the exception of Bellingham's come in, Bellingham's the first player that I can remember for a long time that probably could hold, you know, the nation's expectations on his shoulders and probably deal with it and cope with it in that kind of position. But the need to find a way of getting Phil Foden involved in the same Foden, team, I think.
I genuinely think with Bellingham and Foden and Kane, may I add, that England would have three of the top five or six players in the world. Three of the top five or six. I've never been able to say that before, I don't think. Mm-hmm. Three of the top five or six players in the world playing for them. I mean, Foden is that good. Just let him play anywhere. Give him a free role to just go wherever he wants. We saw what he did against us. Earlier on this season, he was unplayable. He just ripped us apart as a player. He was unbelievable. And I think he's got that in him virtually every game, whenever he wants. So, I mean, Hoddle's another player. I mean, I mentioned Hoddle there. He was a player that Robson dropped. And when you look at certain interviews... I think it was Gary Lineker was basically saying that they should have built the team round Hoddle. He was that gifted. You know, his passing was second to none.
So many creative midfielders talk about Hoddle as an influence on them, you know, who came through later and say that Hoddle was the person that they used to look up to. And, yeah, he was a wonderful player. But so Bobby dropped Kevin Keegan as well.
He did, yeah, badly, really. He should have sort of spoken to him first, didn't he? Didn't do it the right way. Didn't ring him. Should have spoken to him. But, I mean, when I look back, It's odd because you talk about the golden age, and that I genuinely think the last World Cup was the best World Cup I've ever seen. I think the last World Cup and the final was it was just incredible, wasn't it?
It was a good final. I'll give you that. It was a good final, yeah.
It's probably that and the 78 World Cup are the two most enjoyable World Cups I've ever watched.
Where does 1990 rate for you then?
Not that high. I think it was... quite a dull tournament. I thought I loved it because England did really well, but it was quite a dull tournament.
I loved watching Scalacci that year. Scalacci for it. Yeah. Was superb. I mean, Toto Scalacci, I mean, that story about how he ended up becoming the centre forward that year was just fascinating.
Yeah, he had those eyes, didn't he? And 86 was great. I thought it was fantastic. And don't get us wrong, Maradona's the greatest player I've ever seen. Obviously the hand of God game as well, but the goal was sensational, and he's the greatest player I've ever seen by quite a bit. I know Messi is incredible.
The beauty of that 86 tournament was Peter Beardsley linking up with Gary Lineker for that hat trick against Poland. Yeah, that was. I mean, I remember having to stay up late for that. I was still at school. I think I was 14 when that game was. I remember listening to it on my radio in my bedroom, like, and it was a school night, but it was fantastic. Yeah, and you know that was just amazing. Peter Beardsley came back from Mexico, like a different kind of person. I bought a Scotland top in 78.
Ali's Army. I remember the song.
In a way, Hoddle was right to drop Gazza, says Blue Rhythm Boys, much as I love Gazza, but the way he did it broke the guy and is almost unforgivable. Yeah, I mean, Gazza was always going to have his demons, always going to have issues, which he continues to have to this day. But yeah, I mean, you know, it was the whole Eileen Drury phase of Glenn Hoddle's.
I love that pain, please, wasn't it?
Well, I think the story that Steve Howie tells is that Gazza went in for Eileen Drury, and the way that Hoddle... and apparently decided to pick the team was that anyone who didn't take Eileen Drury seriously wasn't going to go to the World Cup. And apparently Gazza sat in the chair. She was behind him and she's going like this. And he's going, "What are you doing?" And she's going, "I'm getting rid of the chakras, you know, the evil chakras from you, Gazza, you know." And anyway, he managed to keep his laughing until, you know, he couldn't anymore. And he starts giggling and laughing. And she goes, "What's the matter, Paul? What are you laughing at?" He goes, he says, "All the evil spirits are pulling faces out of the window." And he got told to get out. And he never got picked for England. Whether that's true or not, who knows? But it's a hell of a story that Steve Howe likes to tell when he does his talk-ins anyway. Mark Byer says, '82 was the greatest World Cup for me. The Paolo Rossi story, that quarter-final versus Brazil with Zico, Socrates, etc. was superb. But Brazil had the worst number nine ever, Serginho.
Yeah, he was terrible. I mean, they had players like Edair. He could bend the ball. He hit the ball. It was like a banana. It just literally would go around corners. Falcao, Junior, Socrates. I mean, that's how you can still remember all the players. They were that good. And I think they went on some ridiculous run of like 33 games unbeaten before the World Cup. They were something special. If they'd had a centre forward.
That story, I think I've told it on here before, but Socrates being linked with Newcastle, it was a back page headline in Chronicle, and it was on the billboards when billboards were a thing. And Socrates set to sign for Newcastle was the story. And of course, there was hell on about it because there was no intention of Socrates ever signing for Newcastle. There was question marks over where the story'd come from. And it was John Gibson who'd written the story. It was Gibbo who'd written the story, yeah. And it turns out Gibbo had been sitting in the printer's pie, which is no longer there anymore, on Pudding Chair in Newcastle. And had basically overheard a guy saying that Socrates was coming to Newcastle, not realizing that it was a student band from a certain part of the UK that was touring and was going to play in Newcastle. And that was where the story came from. But great stuff, great story that.
I remember once we had Alan Oliver on the train and we chanted all the way from London up to the northeast, Socrates nonstop.
Unbelievable.
Sorry, lads, it wasn't me.
Gary says, "I remember Hoddle and Waddle on Top of the Pops, but we do a bit of music on this show." He says, "Maybe Rob will review the album." Dear God.
Diamond Lights. Wasn't a bad song, actually. It was all right.
Was there an album, though?
I don't know if there was an album, but it was not a bad song. It wasn't terrible.
It was better than Head Over Heels by Kevin Keegan.
Better than the Anfield Rap.
Oh, I like that. "All right, Aldo, sound as a pound. I'm Kushti Lab, but there's nothing down." I remember that, dear me. 1970 was the best World Cup. Brazil, Italy, West Germany and England were all good teams. I mean, that was the year.
Yeah, Roger, ain't old enough, I'm afraid. First one I watched was 74.
That was the World Cup where Bobby Moore got arrested?
Yes, in Mexico for shoplifting, which he didn't do, apparently. It was all set up, wasn't it? And I mean, Peter Benetti got castigated for them losing that game, didn't he? He was in goal. He did dive over one of them, to be fair, but he was a top keeper, the cat, as he was known as.
Ian as well said, "Surely 66 was the best World Cup." Well, neither me or Sid were alive then. But
the 70 squad was unbelievable. And all the players who played in the 66 World Cup team all said that the 70 squad was much better. Mm-hmm. But it's horses for courses, isn't it, you know?
In 1970, that was the unbelievable bank save, wasn't it?
It was incredible. Incredible save, especially through that air as well, because you've got the sheer height, they're so high up the air, the ball's going to go a little bit quicker. And marvellous save, incredible save, actually.
And 98 was the first World Cup that Dave watched. So there we go, 98. Yeah, it was one to forget that, wasn't it? We weren't in it.
Well, I wasn't, but I do remember it because we were in it.
It was 94. 94 was America.
Yeah. Sheer squad. I remember being in a bar with my wife, and we were engaged at the time, and we were in Rhodes. And it was Germany versus Croatia. That was it.
Yeah.
And so the bar was full of half of Germans, half Croatians. And we were there just watching the game. And I think they got beat 3-0. And all the German fans just stormed out like, you know, and the place was bouncing. It was a great game. It was absolutely fantastic. Great atmosphere in the bar. Really, really good. Really, really enjoyable.
Okay, we're halfway through the show. Time for the ads, and then we'll be bringing Rob in for his music review. A big thanks to all our sponsors, Skips and Bins. Go to their website, skipsandbins.com. Email inquiries at skipsandbins.com or telephone 0800 25 45 25 3. Easy contract free and pay-as-you-go waste collection. Thanks to Mr. Vicky's Sauces, handmade in Cumbria. Go to their website, mrvickys.co.uk. Email info at mrvickys.co.uk or telephone 01768 210 102. Thanks to United Group Travel. Go to their website, unitedgrouptravel.com. Email info at unitedgrouptravel.com or phone 01670 632 460 or mobile 0791 666 4174. They're a local company from Morpeth and there are no strangers on our tours, just friends you haven't met yet. Big thanks to Media Arts for all the help with the video side of things. And if you want to subscribe to the channel, hit the subscribe button under the video. Click the thumb up to like the video and click share to share to your social media. If you want to help the channel financially, you can pay a one-off £25 fee. You get a cup, a scarf, a pen and a membership card and entry into the NUFC Matters monthly draw. Email John at nufcmatters.com for more details. Or if you've got a smartphone, scan the QR code now and it takes you straight to the membership pack. We also support the food bank on this channel. Go to nufcfansfoodbank.co.uk and you'll find the matchday bucket. You can make a donation virtually today. You can also find us on iTunes, Spotify and other podcast providers. We also do events during the year. NUFC Matters Live will be at the O2 City Hall on Friday the 2nd of August for an evening with Rob Lee, One Night in Antwerp. Tickets start at £15 and you can get them from ticketmaster.co.uk. An evening with the entertainers takes place on Friday the 24th of January 2025 at the Tyne Theatre and Opera House in Newcastle. Telephone 0844 249 1000 or visit the website tynetheatreandoperahouse.uk to buy tickets today. You can also catch me on the North East Footy Breakfast Show live on Toon Radio weekdays 7 till 9 a.m. on DAB, smart speakers and the toonuk.com. And it's good afternoon to Rob from Give Up the Ghost UK. How are you, Rob?
I'm good, Steve. How are you? And how are you, Sid?
Very good. Yourself?
I'm really, really well. Yeah, that's just moved into our house, so still unpacking, still busy, but we're getting there.
Good stuff, mate. Got your record collection behind you as well.
Some of it, yeah. I was just watching, you were talking about music songs for footballs. Just found this in my collection.
Squeeze, Charlton Athletic, what's that?
Yeah, Down in the Valley, CD. So, yeah, I've not listened to it, but it's an official CD anyway, so I don't know. Not too sure, but yeah, there you go.
All right, mate, what are you looking at this week?
Today is a request by Chris Hall. 2 weeks ago, he dropped this in my comments section. So it's a third studio album by The Verve. Brilliantly produced album. It's produced by Youth, of course, one of my favourite bands, Killing Joke. He plays bass for them. Four singles off this album is Bittersweet Symphony, The Drugs Don't Work, Lucky Man and Sonnet. So opening with Bittersweet Symphony, it's the Rolling Stones previously owned all the royalties to this song. It was the last time was used without permission. So this was later amended by the Verve's in the Verve's favour. I think at the time the Verve, I think it was €1,000 the only royalties he got from it, but that was released. Brilliant video to this. Again, it is based on Massive Attack's Unfinished Sympathy. Love the video to this. Again, it's very similar to Massive Attack's video walking down the street in London. It's, to me, it's a less is more video. Brilliant arrangements in this song. I like the spoken word backing vocals on this as well. Top draw song, brilliant opener, and the production again on this song is absolutely outstanding. You got track two called Sonnet. I'm putting this down as an indie ballad. Beautiful vocal delivery by Richard Ashcroft. It's a soothing song. It's emotional, really powerful, bit of a masterpiece of a track. It's very sort of sentimental. It's a good story to the song. Sort of, you know, tugs at the heartstrings for me. Then you've got The Rolling People. It's a psychedelic rock feel on this one. I think it's about drug life and drug culture. Nice reverb on the guitar parts on this one. It's not radio friendly. It lasts for over 7 minutes. Quite a good punchy song. Really nice wah-wah effects on this. I love wah-wah effects on guitars. Brilliant song. Really like it. And of course, you've got The Drugs Don't Work. Again, it's a slow song, sentimental song. It reminds you of Chicago's If You Leave Me Now, and I was listening to it. It's just parts of it I was picking up. And you remember that classic in the 70s, If You Leave Me Now. This is a number one single. It's a hopeful song, really strong lyrics, beautifully delivered again by Richard. Track five is Catching the Butterfly. Really like the bass runs on this one. It's got a bit of a Radiohead feel, I think. So basic standard indie drumming, which is what happened with a lot of these indie bands. So quite a trippy intro. It's got a live jam feel to it. Very good experimental song. It's quite good. We've got track six, Neon Wilderness. It's again a hazy, trippy, foggy atmosphere feel in this song. I'm not keen on it. I think it's a bit of a filler, but it sounds like a bit of a demo it was just put in. Space and Time, next number seven. It's sort of like a warm zen feel again. It's nice acoustic guitar and nice slide playing with added distortion. Really nice drumming, and it's quite soft. Sung with heart and passion. I think this is my favourite song on the album. Really good song, Space and Time, it's called. You've got track eight, Weeping Willow. Really good bass on this one again. It's a lot of texture and lead guitar on this, various effects, a moody vocal delivery. It's a good positive outlook and life song. It's very memorable lyrics if you look back and reflect on life. You've got Lucky Man, it's another single, track nine, acoustic opening again, sort of a bit of a blues feel, sort of electric parts, lead guitars, sort of bringing the song to life. Brilliant video, it's like a jam session in a studio flat. It's again inspirational, inspiring lyrics in this song. It's a good song, love the video to it. Track 10, it's One Day, it's a nice Hammond organ on this one. It's a song about validating the past situations, emotions, conversations, and I think it's about Nick McCabe, where they had a fallout. It's quite publicised. There's a rift between them, Nick and Richard. Life's too short, so they say. You got track 11, it's a dancey, it's a bit indie dancey, trippy again. Good vocals, mood swing feel to it. It's a good chorus, nice harmonies again. Again, if you picture this, it's like a city at night with lights, you know, that sort of red and glow, the traffic. It's got a bit of a vibe to me for that. So outlook, then you've got Velvet Morning. It's an acoustic opener with slide in the background, nice bass, simple ride and snare drum work. Picks up randomly, drops the pace when you least expect it. It's a very, very clever song, well written, good arrangements, well put together. So that's the album review. It was a double album. It's one of the most iconic albums of the 90s. You know, and again, I do prefer doing song by song in an album, because if you don't, you're missing out somebody's favourite song, and it's my outlook on it. But it's really, really good. I think there was only one track in it that I wasn't too keen on, but it's getting a 9 out of 10 for me. Really, really good album and well-produced album.
And the album you didn't want to review today was this one. Thanks for this.
Yeah. Yeah, some lovely songs in that.
Where on earth do you get these from?
I've got time on my hands and I'm good with technology, so I would say.
Hopefully it wasn't a scratch and sniff version, that one. Sid, you've got... Oh, look what you got there.
I was just going to show you. I'm going to do a little bit of memorabilia. It's some items. I was watching the show, The Three Amigos. I've seen Mitch is wearing a Metallica t-shirt. So this is a box set called Binge and Purge. It's three VHS book, Backstage Pass for the Snake Pit, and all the concerts on CD. It was quite rare at the time. Just a nice bit of memorabilia. And just seeing Mitch's t-shirt reminded me of a bit of Metallica. And yes, I still do have a video recorder. So yeah, it's just nice to show.
Fantastic. All right, good stuff. Sid, what are you bringing to the table this week?
Is this So that's my signed copy of Foxtrot by Genesis.
Ah, there we go. There's the actual album cover.
Yeah. So, yeah, it's just a great album. Came out in 1972. It's the first album I ever got into by Genesis. I always wondered about them. And when I got the shop, obviously, I got a load of the albums in. I thought, well, I'll give it a try. And it just blew my mind. It really, really did. I was a huge Roxy fan, so I was always into the sort of weird, arty, glam rock stuff. But then I thought I'd give this a go. And it's the classic Genesis lineup for me. You've got Peter Gabriel on vocals, Steve Hackett guitar, Phil Collins, brilliant drummer. Tony Banks keys and Mike Rutherford on bass and electric guitar as well. Just superb. There's only about 5-6 tracks on it. It's really short in terms of the track numbers, but the album's about 50 minutes long. You've got, it starts off with the song called Watcher of the Skies, which is really dark. Starts off with this mellotron and this jazz sort of drumming in the background, this weird time. So it's, you know, it's a proper prog rock album. Just amazing. Great, great song comes in, really hits you between the eyes as a tune. Next, you've got other songs. I'll just whiz through them very, very quickly because I've got a proper show on this. You've got, what else we've got? We've got, various songs. We've got Get 'Em Out by Friday is one that really jumps out. It's about people sort of literally being winkled out of their houses and trying to cram more people into them for social engineering. Very, very funny. Gabriel's lyrics are really, really dark, but very twisted and funny. Yeah. You've got a lovely sort of acoustic instrumental song on there called Horizons. And then you've got the big, massive 23-minute epic on side two of Supper's Ready, which is just magnificent. It's got various time signatures. It's in 7 parts. It's literally 7 different songs that they've sort of shoehorned together, but they work brilliantly. There's one epic piece. It's got references to Christ and Narcissus, Winston Churchill as well. It's very funny, very dark, very powerful. It's got everything you want. I mean, I love the line. There's Winston Churchill dressed in drag. He used to be a British flag plastic bag. What a drag. And it's just superb. It's really funny. At the time, Peter Gabriel very infamously did a gig in Dublin, and he went off stage for 2 minutes and he came back on with his wife's dress and a fox's head on his head. And that was when Genesis suddenly turned into this band that could compete with the likes of Bowie, Alice Cooper, all those great artistic groups who would get dressed up and do something really different and unusual. And he was bonkers. He used to shave the middle of his hair for some bizarre reason. It's just weird. And this is a great, great album. It's not necessarily my favorite Genesis album. You've got to watch the show that we've got on Songs from the Attic, where there's the one. Thank you very much, Steve. Where I go through our rankings, myself and a lady called Ursula. And yeah, it's they've just got a great back catalogue. And book wise, to link with it, I've gone with Phil Collins's book, Not Dead Yet. And it's quite a sad story, actually, in parts. He came from a house of real, real poverty. I mean, desperate poverty, like nothing to eat poverty, you know. He literally had nothing as a kid. He managed to sort of do really well, became a drummer and all the rest of it, and then clearly became famous with Genesis. But he kept going back to those times where he had nothing. And in the book, he gets quite angry about the fact that he's referred to as a Tory. He was always seen as, oh, if you'd be like Phil Collins, you're a Tory, blah, blah, blah. And he says he's never voted Conservative in his life due to the background that he's ever come from. He slaughters Noel Gallagher in the book, who comes across as a total arse, when he refers to the fact that they were doing a gig. Sorry, they weren't doing a gig. They were in a bar, and there's a load of musicians there. Noel Gallagher goes, oh, do you want to get up and jam? He's talking to everybody. And he just blanked Phil Collins, and Phil goes, oh, I'll come and drum for you if you want. No, thanks. You're all right, mate. Don't need you. Don't want you. And he was really, really rude to you. And you think, hold on. You know, Phil Collins is just a really nice bloke. And, yeah, it's quite sad stories at times because, bizarrely, later on in life, in his 50s, he became an alcoholic. Who becomes an alcoholic in the 50s? Surely if you're a rock and roller, you do it in your 20s and your 30s, not in your 50s. So, yeah, it's a good read. It's worth listening to, certainly on the audio book where he does it himself. It's very, very good. Top bloke. Really comes across as a really nice guy. Genesis, love them. Absolutely love them. Especially the early prog stuff. Just class. And Steve Hackett's guitar, he was doing all that diddly, 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 years before Eddie Van Halen was doing it. all the tapping. But there you go.
Good stuff. Well, if you want to listen to the album review, go to Songs from the Attic 1977 on YouTube and give it a subscribe. And a big shout out to Sharon, who's in the chat live from the living room, Rob.
Is she?
I think, yes. Okay. just posted something there. And somebody asked, do we take requests? Yes, we do. And Mark Bayer says, does Rob have a particular genre he prefers? I've seen him do an NWA album, which I asked him to do, so I think he's quite varied. I'd love him to review some other old school hip hop stuff. So there you are, Rob. There's your next task.
Okay. My genre is first wave British Gothic rock. That's me. It was sort of new wave, sort of Squeeze, Ecstasy, late 70s, and then 86 was our 77, absolutely. Still the same. I've never changed. But yeah, I've got a very change. And like you say, it's all about learning Genesis. I was in a band called Stiltskin. Ray Wilson was singing with Genesis as well.
NWA,
I loved that. I was listening to yesterday, Steve, again. Loved
it. Give Easy E's solo stuff a listen. It's well worth a listen. Yeah. Easy E, his very first album was fantastic for me.
NWA's first album's class. Really,
it is.
Really
it is. The second one, I'm not as big a fan of that one. I have to skip through some of it. It was a bit pretentious in parts, but I think Easy E's first album, his album was brilliant. Listen to that. Well worth a listen to. Maybe he's even a bit of Public Enemy. Haven't looked through Public Enemy, go through Public Enemy's early stuff was excellent.
I bought two Public Enemy albums, not listened to them yet when I bought the NWA album, so I've got them behind me. Yeah, so yeah.
First one's great.
Yeah, well worth listening to. Big thank you to you, Rob. You sent us a couple of things, but this has got pride of place now. You sent me a set list from Barrowlands, Glasgow, from Oasis. Yeah. So thank you for that, mate. Very nice of you to do that. Big shout out to you for that. And good to have you on, as always, mate. And good result for Gateshead last weekend.
Yeah, playing tonight as well. I think that's
Hartlepool tonight. Yeah, well, I've been with Joe Allen today, Hartlepool legend. Joe is on the road to recovery. You know, he's had a tough few months, Joe Allen. But I was out with him today, had a coffee with him today, and he's on his way to the stadium tonight to watch the game. But should be an interesting one. That and quite a few Hartlepool fans travelling up.
Yeah, I'll be watching it.
Good luck to Gateshead. I'm still a Gateshead lad, and look forward to seeing you again next week, Rob.
Okay. Cheers now. Cheers, Sid.
Hey, Rob.
Great to have Rob on, as always. A few more questions coming in from or pointers about the World Cup. We've ended up on a bit of a World Cup show yet today. 1970, says Stephen. World Cup, Bobby Moore arrested in Colombia. Sir Alf was full of help as Jimmy Greaves drove all the way to Mexico in a rally car with a rally driver and got more TV coverage than his team did. Mark says, Cameroon was the great story of the 1990 World Cup. I remember the fouls versus Argentina on Claudio Caniggia. Roger Miller, we didn't know how old he was, and some of the team had their name and number wrote on their shirts with a marker. Wow. That's it. I forgot all about that, actually. West Germany versus England in 1970 cost Terry Collier his marriage, says Georgia in the Likely Lads. Johnny Green says, wasn't 98 when Beckham got sent off?
Of course it was. And it was against the Atletico Madrid manager, wasn't it?
That's right, it was, yeah. Yeah, the documentary on Netflix was superb about that last year. I kind of like Venables running the Euros. We were robbed, Gazza at the back post. Oh.
I think we would have had a good chance of winning the 98 World Cup if they'd had Terry Venables as manager. I really do.
Yeah, top bloke. Steve Mowat goes music. He says, hi, Steve. Question for Sid and Rob. How do they rate Paul Rodgers as a vocalist? We've lost
massive. Because I was going to review Rod Stewart and the Faces today, and Not As Good As a Wink, which I will do. And I was going to compare him, see that him and Paul Rodgers were the two best blues rock vocalists of the 1970s. Throwing Joe Cocker just behind them. Absolutely top draw. Great. I've seen him loads of times. I've got a free show, actually, on our channel. So where we rank the free albums.
All right. There we go. Who is Stephen Sid's favourite England player of all time and manager too? Manager for me, in my time, as a fan, is still Sir Bobby Robson.
I think the best manager was Terry Venables. My favourite one is Bobby Robson.
Closely followed by Terry Venables. I've got to be honest. Yeah, Terry Venables, those two, there's nothing separates. Nothing really separates them other than Bobby got to the semi-finals of a World Cup.
Favourite player's a hard one, isn't it? Because I could do the obvious ones like Beardsley and Waddle. Steve Coppell. There you go. Steve Coppell. Loved him. On the wing. Brilliant.
The player that gave us the most joy was obviously, you know, watching him play and develop over a sustained period was probably Peter Beardsley at 86 and 90. Gazza, again, the Geordie connection. But if you want us to go, if you want us to go away from a Newcastle player,
yeah, which is then what I did.
Peter Shilton.
Shilton was great until about 90. you could get a newspaper under that jump.
It was all Paul Parker's fault. But there we go.
First football hero as a kid. I just loved him. You know, I'm a winger and I loved him. I thought he was just great.
Yeah.
He had a basically roller's haircut.
Yeah, we've had some great players over the years and goal scorers as well. Gary Lineker, of course. I mean, you know, he was always in the right place at the right time. Mr. Clean, you know, if we're going down the musical connotations. Do you take requests for album reviews? We do. If you want to leave a request underneath the in the comments in the show, when the show is finished, Rob tends to pick them up from there. He always likes to see what comments people have got. David Cook, well done. He's got a ticket for the Spurs game. He's been successful in a ballot. Remember the question around the City Hall for 3 days for Genesis tickets?
Oh, the queue.
So there we go. Phil Collins, a philosopher of our age, says Ian. Gabriel and Bush with Don't Give Up is a classic. Kate Bush, of course.
It is. We all love a bit of Bush.
And Darren Lee says,
Kate Bush will appear because I've done a Kate Bush show. I absolutely love her.
Darren says, I agree. I think that's what made the 1990 World Cup great with the underdog. Yeah, because Bobby Robson was up against it as well at the time. Is it true that Gabriel left Genesis because he didn't like the commercial side of things?
No, they were just, it was one of those things. They were on the point of breaking up anyway. And he had a daughter. His daughter was ill. And he was and the others didn't treat him as well as they should have done at the time. And he's wanted to go off and do other things.
As much as I read Genesis, I can see why punk reacted to the prog rock showmanship.
Absolutely, there's a place for all of it. As a punk rocker, as a young boy, I love all of it. There's only two types of music, good and bad. That's literally it.
You know? The score is a suggestion, Rob. I'm sure you'll be watching the final part of this show, but the score is a suggestion from Derek Whitten. By the Fugees. Yep. I think Matthias was amazing, the best player in 1990. He was a legend, wasn't he?
Would have been Maradona if he hadn't been on the marching
pound. On the Colombian, yeah, exactly. Easy does it to the album, Mark. Yeah, that's a fantastic album. Matthias was the complete midfielder, better than anyone today, in my opinion. Chopin is pretty good, says Ian. I've got nothing problem with that. And David's got vinyl. He says, Back Home from the 1970 World Cup. This time, more than any other time.
It's class. Ron's Army, brilliant.
Mark Byer says, the thing with Eazy-E, he wasn't a natural rapper. He was a laughing stock, apparently, when he first tried to rap, as detected in the NWA biopic. It's a good film, that. Eazy was a genuine gangster and drug dealer and entrepreneur. Yeah, he was just a revelation. Eazy-E to that, though. It's one of those things, you know, hell of a life story. He died at 25-year-old, I think, as well, with AIDS.
Egan was my other football hero as a little boy, yeah, so, yeah. In 70s.
Yeah, I can understand that. Yeah. So Bobby Robson got England to the World Cup semis, even with the pressure on his back from the media wanting him out. Yeah, I was mentioning that appalling. Earlier.
The threat, absolutely appalling. There were certain journalists who are dead now, and they were the same journalists who, from day one, went up to Kevin Keegan and basically told him that they wanted him out. It was the same ones. So awful, absolutely awful, just horrible.
Mark Byers says, Beardsley was massively underrated outside of Newcastle, one of the greatest players the UK has ever produced, 100%. Shilton was diving late for those 1990 penalties, was a shambles. We've never done well in penalties, though, have we? It doesn't matter who's been in goal.
I think Shilton's still going down at the moment. He's
Alan Ball, says Stephen Kennedy, is a potential player.
Supermatt, wasn't it, who rated Alan Ball as possibly the best player he ever played with?
Oh, he loves him. He loved him.
He literally had two touches, touch pass, something like
Alan
that.
Alan Ball was the one who got the whole team against Cyprus because of Don Revy's hatred for Supermax. Yeah. He was the one who got everyone to pass to him on that day to get five goals, much to the annoyance of Kevin Keegan. Beardsley, my favourite player ever. The ball looked tight at his feet when he dribbled.
Genius. Best player we've seen at Newcastle.
And what were the Mondays like? It was a great gig, Tom. To be honest, the support act in Spiral Carpets, I think we were all a bit shocked. I think walking up the queue, me and my mate Dave, who went to the gig, were like, Christ, look at the age of this crew, And then you realise how old you are when you're going to a gig like the Happy Mondays. Stereo MC stole the show. I mean, Mondays were great. Stereo MCs were brilliant, though. Blew me ears off. But what a great set. Alan McGee is managing the Stereo MCs at the moment. Just amazing. Fantastic. If you get a chance to go and watch the Stereo MCs this year, go and see them. Even if you don't like the music, they were excellent. In Spiral Carpets, I think the shock was that the three band members came on with, you know, I don't know what I was expecting. They came on, musically they were sound, vocals sound, but they came on and they were like granddads. And I was thinking, wow, they haven't aged well compared to all of us. And they came on and they had two youngsters on with them. Two youngins playing, I'm sure, whether they were related to them or what, I don't know. But musically sound, but a lot of people were critical of them. I enjoyed it. I enjoyed it for what it was, but it wasn't the In Spiral Carpets I was going to see. I was going to see the 1991 In Spiral Carpets, you know. And I think it was the way they were dressed. I think they'd come on wearing T-shirts and stuff like that, but they came on very formal. And right. I think that's what threw everybody a little bit. But musically sound, and if you get an opportunity to go and see, the Happy Mondays, the Stereo MCs and In Spiral Carpets, go and do it because they're absolutely brilliant. Blue Rhythm Boy's going to leave a request in the chat. That's great. Thanks, Sid. Big of Bad Company. His latest solo album is class, he says.
It is good. Apparently, he's had heart issues, I believe, over the last couple of years. I mean, I saw him about 5 years ago at the City Hall. He was just saying it's the best venue in the world. He was sensational again that night. Just great.
Yep, is Genesis really punk rock? Really? I don't know if that was...
We didn't say it was, did we? You know,
I think you misread that. Yeah. I started listening to 1996 hip-hop again. Tupac, Legend, All Eyes on Me, still one of my favourite albums. Maybe put that in the chat, Darren, and in the comments under the video. Rob will pick that one up as well. Beardsley on the Shira Lineker Richards podcast.
Yeah, it was good. I watched it. Yeah. Good.
Did he talk about Newcastle? I haven't had a chance to do it yet.
Yeah, he did. Did bits about it. He was spot on. It was really good. It was actually quite funny. It was quite funny. It was self-deprecating a little bit. Maybe it's too much.
He does that at talk-ins, yeah. Yeah. There's nothing wrong with that, but I know what you mean. I was surprised to see Stereo MCs are still going. I think they made a bit of a comeback under Alan McGee. Would Beardsley do a pre-record podcast with you? I've asked the question. We will wait and see. You can go onto our channel to see one of the live shows that we did with them, though, which is amazing. Shannon and Ball was a great football show from the early 80s. Yeah, Mick Shannon and Alan Ball.
Can I just say, because I've been asking the Gary Lineker show for ages to see what's the best sort of thing would you like to see come back at football? I want to see the Mick Shannon goal salute come back. I absolutely loved it. The windmill, the whole... was brilliant, man. You know?
Yeah.
He played about 6 games for Newcastle.
Yeah.
Mick Shannon. I remember watching him. Yeah, he wasn't very good. He was past his prime at that point. But he was a good player when he's England days.
I am going to go to this, I think, because
I've seen the Peter Hook a few times. He's very good. In fact, his audio books are great. I've got a picture of me and Peter Hook somewhere. I'll have to share it sometime.
My mates are supporting him that night, aren't they? The farm.
He's tiny as well. I didn't realise I was actually taller than Peter Hook. He's really quite short. If you get the chance, listen to his books. They're absolutely brilliant because he talks about being married to Caroline Ahern, which is quite awful, actually. It's not a great relationship. It's one of those fractious relationships. But his books are brilliant, really funny, dark, just top, top notch. And he does the audio books because I asked him to do the audio book on the last one and he told us where to go first of all. And then he's went and done it. And it's great. It's really, really good. Really, really good. Excellent listen.
Okay, we've got 1 minute to look ahead to the West Ham game. How do you think that's going to go, mate, at the weekend?
Tough game because they're a good team. They've got some players I really like. Bowen, I really particularly like. I actually think Bowen, Barnes is our equivalent to Bowen. I can see them almost as parallel sort of players. Not top level, but both very, very good and will score goals. So he's a threat. Lascelles back for Botman, that's good. Obviously, Botman's going to be up for a long time now. I don't want to see Sean Longstaff anywhere near the starting 11. I want to see Elliot Anderson starting in place of him now. He's had 2 extra weeks to train. So I want to see Elliot start. And I want to see Miley come on and replace him after 60 minutes when he's done his time. And I don't want to see Sean Longstaff start unless he's fully fit, which he's not. So let him get fully fit, give him an operation, or do whatever you have to do. But I don't want to see Sean Longstaff start. I think it'll be a tough game. Score 3-2.
God, still nothing your heart can take it. Thanks, Sid, as always, and thanks to Rob. Thanks to everybody in the chat. Always a bit different this show, so make sure you join us on a Tuesday afternoon. It's always slightly earlier, and hit the subscribe button. We are actually only about 500 subscribers away from the capacity of St James's Park as it stands at the moment. So if you haven't already, share the channel. Let your mates know. Copy and paste it, send it in your WhatsApp groups, whatever, and just ask people to subscribe. It is free. We do 7 shows a week. It would be nice to hit the capacity of St James's Park with subscribers before the end of the season. But thanks, everybody, for tuning in. Sid, we will see you next week. Take care, mate.
Take care, folks. Bye-bye. Thank you.